Hey, welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. We are getting you what you want with good rhetoric, not bad rhetoric. Stay away from that stuff. Complicated situations require sophisticated techniques. So learn some stuff about rhetoric. It's been around for 2,500 years. They've got some ideas, turns out. I'm Dr. Dan, American rhetorician, escaped professor. I pulled the ripcord and jumped out of the ivory tower. Also late night comedy writer, stand-up comic, and founder of Rhetoric Warriors. On this podcast, I do three things, really. I talk to comedians about their politics because there's always interesting stuff going around in their heads. I convert conservatives. It's kind of a hobby of mine these days. Sort of fun. Send me a conservative if you have one that you want converted. I'll talk to them. It's highly entertaining. And I glean persuasion advice from people with specific persuasion expertises. I like expertise. And my claim to fame for this podcast is I have more rhetoricians on this podcast than any other podcast in existence. I think we're up to like
is that 10. One?
No, I bring all my old friends on, like people who actually have degrees in rhetoric and teach it and things like that. So more rhetoricians than anywhere else. Doesn't take that much. My guest this week, I've known for quite a while. She is an expert. That's how I'm going to label you, with the big stamp of expert on your forehead. She's an expert on Evernote, for those of you who are Evernotians. So you're going to get some interesting insight into this stuff because she knows Evernote like nobody else knows Evernote. So much so that she makes her living selling her expertise. Kind of like me, she's an intellectual mercenary. Have brain, we'll sell pieces of it. So we're going to talk strategy and tactics with her. Everybody welcome Stacey Harmon.
Hi, Stacey. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hi, Dan.
Where's the dog? Dr. Dan.
This is Paquette. She's visiting. And she's gonna join us and provide her expertise as well. How about that?
I like it. What's her name?
Cosette. She's a little Frenchy.
Yeah, she is Frenchy.
Les Mis, Cosette.
Now that you say it, I can connect those things, but I have never encountered the actual experience of Les Mis.
You have not?
It feels like I would be miserable in Les Mis.
I mean, it's in the title.
Right. I mean, they tell you straight up, you're not going to enjoy this. It's like I used to say about Tombstone Pizza.
Yeah, right.
They're not being subtle here. We're trying to kill you.
That's funny.
So, well, run your background for us a little bit. You've had a sort of a career in real estate where you're marketing work, and then you moved over into Evernote, and it's not get her done. What's the get things done?
Getting things done, GTD.
So you've got a nice little history with that stuff. Sort of just kind of give people a little background with it.
I'm basically just an Evernote and organization nerd. Like, my interests in both of those things kind of led to this career. So I think I have this abnormal talent for organizing things. I just can't help myself. And it's
like
always
dogs
been
dog collars.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, we're color coordinated today. It's how my personality works. And I've always had that element in my life. I always it's soothing to me to organize things. And over the course of my career as an employee, I also realized that I gravitated towards software tools, and I gravitated towards teaching people how to use tools to be better organized and more efficient. And this tool called Evernote came along in my life, and I went, wow, this is really cool. And I'm an organized person, and this is a tool that kind of helps you digitally organize your life. And suddenly I was getting a lot of requests to train on that, and I enjoyed it, and it fit with my natural talents. And so I kind of have this business I've built at the intersection of showing people how to digitally organize their lives using this very rich tool that most people don't understand. And I help them take something that is pretty nebulous and big and often complex for people and simplify it down to how you can get it to work for you and use it to better organize and be digitally prepared for whatever life throws at you. So between that and my love of that tool, as well as the philosophy you mentioned called Getting Things Done, it's a New York Times bestselling book by a guy named David Allen. It's a methodology, a personal productivity methodology that really provided a construct for me that was very helpful in understanding how to really structure the amount of things I was interested in keeping track of and prioritizing and working off of those things. And when I read that book, which is simply a methodology, you have to have a tool outside your brain to act as your trusted system and allow your brain to do, as he says, your brain's for having ideas, not for holding them. And you have to have a place to hold all your ideas. And Evernote was I had enough experience with Evernote to know that it's a brilliant tool for that. So I kind of developed this GTD system in Evernote. And now that's become a product that I use every day for going on 9 years now. And I help other people experience the tagline of his book, which is stress-free productivity, using the same methodology and organization in Evernote.
Yeah, a nice pitch. You've pitched that before.
It's the truth. It's my story. And it's really just, it's what I do. I teach what I do and what's worked for me. And it works for a group of people that I guess think like I do as well. And there's something and could use some accountability and assistance in getting there. And it can be complex, but it's a process and a lifestyle. And it's something that you keep chipping away at and it really works. I mean, I can't tell you how much it works. You and I have just had this experience in Austin where life was up, we had a complete upheaval last week. We had a snowmageddon or ice storm in a place that we can't cope with that. And my system had to completely pivot. But because I had one in place, I was able to refocus my energy, not really miss a beat, and get back into a system that is productive very, very seamlessly. And it's all a credit to this methodology and this tool that I use.
Yeah. So when I listen to that story, it flows nicely. You know, people talk about self-branding all the time, right? Like it's one of these sort of mystical ideas that if you can create the perfect self-brand that aligns with a product, then you can, have an online business. You can be kind of a guru. And people, a lot of people search for that sort of self-branding, but yours flowed very nicely through this is who I am to this is a tool, and it applies to a lot of different people, right? So that's a nicely holistic, unified brand, seems like.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad you think so. So I'm doing something right.
No, I think it's great. I mean, because you are, there's nothing out of line in there about like, it aligns with your natural personality and your skills and your interests. So there's a good clean reason why you would be a guru in this. It's a natural enjoyment you have. And the tool itself, we can go back into that a little bit and you talk about your expertise on it. I mean, that's the problem, right? It's a complicated tool because it kind of has to be for a complicated world. It holds a lot of stuff. So those three locations of you as the brand, that has a certain skill and ability and natural talent for this, the tool itself, which is very robust. And then you have a world that's just crazy. There's so many things to organize in modern life that you've got those three little things kind of sitting there, three areas, but they work together pretty well.
Yeah. It's, I'm never short on fodder. We'll put it that way. There's always something to discuss or to help with. Yeah, that's for sure.
And so actually that way, like if you look at those three locations of you over here as Stacy Brand and then Evernote, and you also have Getting Things Done kind of mixed in there. And then Modern Life, like over here in Modern Life, you can pull out any context and then move it back over here and explain how it works. Like you do this with taxes and accounting, I know, as part of the offer.
Yeah, for sure. It's there's no shortage of application because it's really the blend of a methodology and a system. And then you could take any case study and run it through that.
So what are the balks people have? Like if you think of those three areas, if we're looking at those as like, I look at this all as rhetoric design, right? So the big strategies points that people will look at are they'll vet you.
Yeah.
Right. And then they'll vet the tool. And then they'll vet their lives. Does it actually have these effects in their modern life that they want? So if you start pulling things out like that, like what is something about Evernote, if we're going to build up the ethos and the credibility of Evernote itself, that you think it does super well, better than everything else, that for people who have never really used it?
Well, I mean, I can answer that question directly for you. But I want to just let you know, like, I don't frame it that way. Like, if you want to talk about how I view the presentation of what I do and helping people to understand if I'm a fit, if what I do is a fit for them or not in those three buckets, I agree that there's those three buckets that I have to address, but I look at it more like I'm never directly selling things to people. I'm trying to help them understand what I look at is I've identified some beliefs that people have to have if they're going to be my customer. And so I'm working towards making sure that my public communication is around explaining what those beliefs are and helping you either agree or disagree. And if you agree, you're going to move closer to being my customer. And if you disagree, you'll figure out another path. So I'm filtering people in and out based on education about what I think it takes to succeed with these methodologies and these principles. And every piece of communication that I put out there is around that level of education. And it leads to a self-selection on the customer's part if they should proceed with what I offer for sale or not. So that's more how I view it.
So you have a fourth bucket, targets, that you qualify the targets with questions that you ask.
Yeah. So like, I'll give you an example. So one of the things that brought me a lot of visibility is that there's a big debate in the Evernote world about how you organize Evernote. Should it be with notebooks or tags, right? So I have a really strong opinion about that. But if you disagree with my opinion on it, you're not my customer because my products are all based around organizing with notebooks, right? So it's a belief. You have to believe that notebooks are the right way to organize your account if you're going to succeed with my product, my GTD product in particular. There's other products I have where that's not relevant, but you know, that's a belief that you have to have. And I spend an immense amount of effort educating as to why that is so. And I can sum it down to it's more efficient. And then there's a zillion reasons why. And I could talk about that from a content perspective for weeks and months and years and tweets and blogs and emails, right?
Yeah.
But I can sum it all up to, I mean, you want to be more efficient. So let's organize it the most efficient way. And that's with notebooks, not text.
So do you get a lot of...
Can.
Like, is part of your persuasion that you have to do with people? So sounds like you found enough customers who agree with the notebook approach that you're fine just with carving those people out and trying to attract those people to your product.
Well, the truth is I'm pretty effective in convincing them that notebooks are the right approach. So I get a lot of people, I get a lot of visibility because the tag users are like, I wrote a post called Why Michael Hyatt's Wrong About Organizing Evernote with Tags. And so for those that don't know, Michael Hyatt's a big productivity guru in the online space and has a great success. I adore what he does. He's an Evernote user and he wrote a post talking about how he organizes Evernote and he organizes it with tags. And he missed a lot of points, in my opinion. So I wrote a post with a pretty clickbait headline, right? But I backed it up with my expertise and I talked about it to the point where Michael Hyatt tweeted about it and said, so Stacey Harmon disagrees with my perspective. She has some points. I'm reevaluating what, you know, how I organize my account, which is like the best endorsement I could possibly get, right? But if you have the expertise and you have a point of view, you can educate people as to why one way is better than another. And I'm not anti-tags. Like, I always feel like I have to say that when I have this discussion because it's such a polarizing debate in the Evernote universe.
That is so nerdy. But that is so nerdy to say those words. Polarizing debate. You know, tags versus notebooks.
It is nerdy. I told you I'm an Evernote nerd. I'm an Evernote geek for sure. But this is the reality that converts people over time is helping them to understand why. Like, I can't just say that, but I suppose with the level, with some people, I in my position, when people know I'm an Evernote expert and I say that, that's enough. But it's not enough if you want to fully understand and appreciate how to really succeed with GTD in Evernote, right? You have to understand the reasons why a notebook-based approach is superior. And so I have thousands of words in blog posts explaining explaining that one concept.
Yeah. And that's, you know, one of the books/courses that I'm working on is Invincible Persuasion, like the 21 things you need to know to be able to persuade anybody about anything. And basically I just break it out into different camps of persuasion. And one is logic, you know, the ability to have expertise, logic, argue it into the world to the point where nobody can beat it. You know, and that essentially is what the power of a really good expert who can communicate, that's what they bring to persuasion. And the fact, like you said, thousands of words and lots of different blog posts, and you were able to create a beef with one of the stars of, you know, that world and win, that's pretty impressive logos.
Well, it's worked. I believe in it passionately too. I mean, it's what I believe. And
yeah.
If I can bring the audience along to be in alignment with me on it, then I've achieved more success. So that's really my philosophy. And I take that lesson's been really valuable to me. I'm taking it into every other thing that I need to decide. I mean, to your point, I mean, people have to believe that I'm an expert, right? In order to follow what I teach. And so I give a lot of free information and work with partners who can help build my expertise. I mean, this is what social media is really good at. So, I mean, I always have a layer around that. I maintain a relationship with Evernote through being an Evernote certified consultant and an Evernote regional leader, which is, you know, only one of seven people are Evernote regional leaders. So I have these kinds of credentials that I'm certainly make sure people know about. Like, that's part of it too, because I am after the belief that they can trust me to guide them on their Evernote journey. So that's another one, but there's all kinds of them. I mean, there's all kinds of, you have to believe. I come across all the time, people are like, well, compare it to OneNote, compare it to Notion, compare it to Rome, all these other things. I'm like, I'm not your gal. Like, you have, my customer is already an Evernote user. And if you mm-hmm. want to use Evernote, I'm going to show you how to use it deeper. And I'm not going to convert you to Evernote if you don't want to be an Evernote. I'm not going to sit here and argue like that. Like, I'm for people that decide that Evernote's for them. And they want to, so the belief that I actually work on with that one is there's no perfect app out there, none. And app switching is killing your productivity.
Yeah, I've seen that many times.
You kind of get people's attention with that. And then it's like, okay, well then if I'm serious about investigating apps, then maybe she's a good resource to explain to me why Evernote is where it's strong, where it's weak, and how I can navigate within that. I think you have to understand the constraints of whatever tool you pick. There's constraints in all of them. And a lot of people just don't take the time to learn that. So that's a belief I work on all the time, is that you have to learn your tool if you want to be effective.
So you, like I said, the one of the things I've always liked about you and the way that you do your stuff, because we've done some, you know, marketing work on you in the past, it's that you don't just have a dry expertise about everything. You also have this very emotional attachment to, you know, the decisions that you've made. And I think you do a really nice job of bringing that emotion and that sense of, you know, true belief in this particular tool, even though you admit like it's got, you know, it's got things missing or it's not perfect, but it's so good that, and that comes across really strongly in you. There's an emotional component to your pitching.
Oh, I thank you for saying that. I hadn't it goes back to your earlier point, which for me, it's alignment. Like I'm doing something that I love and that I believe in. And I appreciate its faults as well as its perfection. You know, it has all of that. It's just like a human, right? there's nothing perfect about it, but you know, you can trust me to tell you where it's working and where it could be better or where it's not the right tool for it. And there's other things you can use within the ecosystem that can solve your problem. So I get excited by figuring out, you know, what's the end goal and how can we structure something to meet that? And Evernote will be at the center of that, but it might not be the only thing that we use.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, that emotionality comes through. Like you're never, like I said, just dispassionately kind of droning on about Evernote. Like you were always, there's always a sense of excitement when you talk about it.
Yeah, my Evernote geek, but once again. Yeah.
It's useful, like in persuasion, like it's really hard to watch somebody online who's, you know, again, trying to build a brand and inhabit their own social media and all that kind of stuff, unless they've got that fervor about something.
I think it's rooted in the fact that it made a drastic difference in my own personal life. So when you personally experience improvement because of something, you're affectionate about it, you know? So it really pivoted how I do work. It created an environment that allows me to work from anywhere. And I enjoy travel. You know that I love to travel. So suddenly one day I looked at my world and I'm like, I have a job I can do from anywhere. All I need is the internet and power. Why am I not doing it from anywhere? You know, why am I not? And like those kinds of things are how I identify as a human and how I want to live my life. And Evernote and GTD are these things that enable me to do that. So of course I'm going to have passion around it. I mean, they're what fuel me.
Well, tell some of those stories. Tell your original story, because you've told me this before, what you were before Evernote, and then, you know, the way you do your life after Evernote. Like, sort of do that as like, so people can see what difference it actually did make when you started doing this type of work.
Well, I was an employee. So really, is this what you're saying? How I went from employee to self-employed?
Well, I think like, you know, if somebody walks through your apartment, they'd see all these crazy organizational systems, you know, that you see the world differently about how can I put this stuff into a way, you know, that it doesn't overwhelm me. You know, it's this kind of strategy of modern life that a lot of people have kind of moved over to about how do I handle all this disparate stuff? And, you know, so that I'm not breaking my mind, holding it all the time. There are things externally holding it. But I remember you telling me at one point about in your own life, like when you started using Evernote and you stopped making, you know, this, I think you're talking about taxes at a certain point, you had a lot of anxiety about taxes and then you figured out, you know, using the system that all goes away if you do it correctly.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it was really this bridge between being an employee and going to self-employed life that was very disruptive to me. It was stressful and I did not handle that well. And I was having anxiety attacks and panic attacks. And I was already an Evernote user, but I didn't have the GTD element. And I had a friend say, stop, Stacy, go read this book. And I did that. And that's when it started to click and I developed the system and things started to change, right? And one of the things that I identified was so painful for me is that I consider myself very responsible. Okay. Very responsible. I like to play by the rules. I don't want to get audited. I want to be, you know, and this plays through to being self-employed. And I had this, it's likely very irrational, but this fear that I'm going to get audited and I'm going to have missed a deduction or I'm going to have not broken the rules. I'm going to end up in jail and like suddenly go there. Right. Suddenly I realized, well, Evernote is this great repository that I can search and find on, and I can search and find on receipts or any pictures I put into the system. If I handwrite something and take a photo of it, it will retrieve it based on my handwriting. Like I just saw the power of the tool. And I thought, well, that sounds smarter than having a shoebox full of receipts in my house that I have to sort through. And I started digitizing everything. I looked up the rules in my state at the time, and a digital receipt was an acceptable form of you know, proof. And I started digitizing everything and centralizing it. And suddenly this has some domino effects. I suddenly have lots less storage that I need to have. I have all this paper that gets cleared up. Everything's in a place that has no real digital overhead. There's no storage cost to it. And I suddenly decide, you know, I could digitize everything in my life. And I go from files and files of back paper and storage. Cause like, we started this by saying how organized I am. I mean, I kept papers, I kept things organized in filing cabinets, and I just digitized it all. I put it all in Evernote and suddenly I'm like, I need less space. I don't need as much space in my life. Suddenly I'm like, I could live in a lot smaller space. I could live in a different location. I could travel. I could do all this stuff. I mean, it's all part of my transition. And then, by the way, I can file my taxes faster. I can find a receipt for a deduction that I didn't have. I do a quick find and I'm like, you know, where's that item from Whole Foods? And I just search for Whole Foods. I'm like, oh, that was a gift, business gift versus a grocery. I can just, you know, I can tag it back to tags versus notebooks. So that kind of a thing. So, I mean, these are all just part of my story that suddenly created a lot of peace of mind for me and created a smaller footprint and the ability to have a lot of more control and organization over something that was creating a lot of stress. And like to the point where I developed a system that I now, like last year, I'm not sure this is something to be proud of actually, but I am, is my accountant said, wow, well, officially you're the first person to file your taxes with us for this year. Now, you know, like who wants to give the government your money earlier than you need to, right? Like, so I understand all of that, but like that was a milestone moment for me because instead, what happened when I first started this process is April 15th would come and filing an extension. And then the stress is lingering until October 15th or 13th or whenever the deadline. It's like all of this energy is wasted on worry mm-hmm. around taxes and invoices and money and receipts and deductions. And suddenly, poof, that's all gone. So a big arc from delaying that all. And then when it's delayed and you finally file in October, the April deadline comes up a lot quicker too. So it's like, it never ends, right? It never ends, but I have solved it. Like Evernote solved it for me. And just changing some small habits and centralizing everything. And at the time that I have it. So I think I've probably told you, if I go to a dinner and the receipt comes to the table, I'm digitizing the receipt right there before it ever, if I ever leave the restaurant, you know, I'm just putting it right into Evernote and I'm putting it right into a notebook and it's done. Like I don't even take the paper with me. So I have eliminated that need in my life and created a more efficient system and operations that helps my mental outlook.
Yeah, I like I said, I find all this stuff like when you actually explain it in detail, you give all the sort of back the micro stories, the specific applications and things like that. I think it takes on a really, you know, it becomes a really strong offer. I always think of people's balk. Like I still have the balk, like you were talking about app switching, like learning a new app. That's got to be one of the major things you've got to overcome with people, right? But that's why you're using people that are already on Evernote because they've already passed that barrier. You don't have to do that work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have to pick an app and you have to go deep with it. You should pick an app that's got a lot of potential and there's lots of them. But then once you're in, then you know, learn the nuances of it. And like I've made the case in a couple of places why Evernote is worth investigating and why I suggest you go deeper. But I do have to constantly, you're not alone in not wanting to learn the app. I mean, this is a big blind spot for people. They think the app's just going to do their productivity for them. And that's a
right
belief that has to be, you have to, you know, tackle as well. That's yeah. Automation. I actually think when you're trying to productivity, you got, that's a problem.
Yeah, for sure. Like just moving into selling online courses and taking all this content that I've sold live forever, and I've done business consulting with it verbally, basically forever, turning it into actual product that you can do with education. Like even in business, like I have a lot of business, materials that I've built to explain my approach of taking rhetoric and applying it to business processes. And I can show people that, and it's extensive, but you can't just drop those files on people in an educational system. You have to explain it. You have to have examples. You have to take them through it because learning is different than just being consulted, you know, quickly about something. So yep. Talk about that a little bit. Like when you decided to turn this into, you know, an online course versus, I know you did these sort of live presentations for a long time and you did personal coaching and consulting for a long time selling that stuff. Talk about that process, like starting that up as a full business where you've got products that live outside of you and that, you know, you're a lot of your time now is spent marketing those because you've poured your expertise into them already.
Yeah. Well, what I saw is that I was doing one-on-one consulting around helping people better use Evernote. And the truth is that the questions started to become repetitive. Like after a while, everybody's got the same questions. There's a lot of questions. It takes a lot of time for me to go through it, but I was getting bored answering the questions over and over and over. And I just kind of said, there's got to be a better way to teach this. I can put this into a course and people can buy the course and it'll be cheaper for them. It'll be more interesting for me. And that's what really led me to create a course. And I've realized that it's a good, if you can structure a course properly, it can be a really effective way to help people achieve a goal. So several years ago, I started on that path, which now it's quite normal, but at that time it wasn't common. That's what led me to do that. And then once those assets are created and those courses exist, really all I turn on into is an online marketer trying to sell my own products, right? I've kind of realized that. I mean, people think of me as a Evernote educator or trainer, coach, but I mean, I'm an online marketer just trying to express my point of view, attract more people to understand what it is I do and how I can help them. And for the most part, unless my products need to be revamped, as Evernote evolves, 100% of my efforts are around the online marketing of my own products.
So talk about that. Do you like that? Is that tedious? Is that, you know, does that become exhausting and repetitive?
Well, it's an interesting game. You know, it's challenging. It's definitely challenging. You know, my personal preference is in the teaching and the helping people get through the light bulb moments. You know, I don't love the selling of it, which is why I've really taken and appreciate an educational approach to selling, because that does suit me. I don't know how to hard sell, really. it's not in my aura or being, I guess. You know, it's a constant evolution to figure out how to attract a steady stream of people to kind of what I do. I mean, I'm really lucky in that I have quite a bit of visibility with Evernote as a company, even though I don't work with them. So that's the core tool that I'm, even though I don't work for them. Let me clarify, I do work with them, I don't work for them. but that helps quite a bit in making sure that I have, people interested in what I'm doing. And then it's my task to help them understand if my products are correct for them or not. I think email is the best channel for doing that, which is an evolution of my strategy. It used to be social. I think there's brilliant channels all over the place, and lots can work. Early on, YouTube was very, very effective for me. I like to teach and I can teach well on camera. I'm not shy to be on camera. So those kinds of things really can work very well. But once they're on your list, I think communicating with people via email and helping them to understand what you do is the most effective path in today's environment.
Are you talking about, do you like building an email list and then sort of hitting it over and over again and with kind of interesting offers?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think I own my list. I don't own my Facebook likes or fans. And you can get deplatformed, you know, it's a whole new word that we've got in our modern marketing world. All of those things aren't appealing to me. If I have having my own email list enables me to do some really powerful things. Like at the end of the year, I decided, like in a moment, post a webinar where I taught something for free and I emailed my list and I had 500 people sign up within 24 hours. So I'm suddenly teaching like that, something that's of value to them. And then a percentage of those people want more and they buy the product at the end of it. So the ability to have that direct communication with people is immensely important. And the credibility that I am not wasting their time. Like it's not fluff. I'm teaching them something. They're going to learn something whether or not they want to buy what I'm selling or not.
Well, and that's one of the nice things I think about like a true expertise, and especially something like yours that has a direct, you know, software app application to it, that a lot of people, you know, try to sell basically self-help, you know, with, and there's a lot of great people who are great at it, you know, but it's all just selling a perspective about something that's fairly nebulous, you know, that people need, but it's nebulous. And your stuff is not nebulous. I mean, it's very, you know, specific.
That's the other lesson here that's been a long time coming that I probably heard right when I was starting, but even just like 12 years into my business, right? I still am just like finally feeling like, oh yeah, there's something I can really believe about that. And the riches is in the niches, right? You hear this all the time. So Evernote in and of itself is a niche, right? And so if you don't know what Evernote is, you don't understand what I do. That's number one. And then within that, I'm taking this subset of people who like 2 million people have read this book, Getting Things Done. And I'm showing of those people who want to deploy it using only Evernote. So I'm mirroring this smaller niche. together. And it, I mean, I don't know how big an audience that is. I don't really know, but the people that are, that I serve are my people. That's for sure. And I'm very famous with about 100 people, you know, or a couple of people. I don't know how many, you know, it's, or whatever my, I have hundreds. I actually have, you know, close to 1,000 people running my system, and it's, you know, working for not only me, but, you know, many people out there, but, it's definitely a niche market.
Yeah. But that's the cool thing when you start to realize, you know, the upside and the power of digital, that, you know, it gets torn down a lot. Like, you know, social media, the documentary it was on recently, just shredding, you know, social media about what's destroying our lives. And, you know, but the upside of it is things like this. Like, you can get popular with 1,000 people, you know, who would never have heard of you otherwise. And you can offer them something very specific that is very useful in their lives. And you can, you know, have a really strong brand offer and brand delivery. It's,
you know, I saw a post on Instagram the other day that said, you know, don't forget there's people with 1,000 followers making a massive living. So it really is true. I mean, that's a great piece of advice, because it is like, you can niche, you can have confidence in that expertise. You just have to go out there and find your people. And modern marketing allows you to do that through digital mediums. So that's the power of it.
But you've done the work, you've done the grind to get, you know, you've tried a lot of different things, you've done the content. And I tell people this all the time about the reality of persuasion. You know, persuasion and rhetoric, you always sort of see in these dramatic terms of big, you know, changes and, you know, these sort of dramatic persuaders, but really it's grind. Persuasion is just grind. It's, you have to have your offers and you have to have things organized, but then it's just taking it out to people over and over again and taking them all the way through the whole pathway of all their balks and their worries and their disbelief. And eventually, if you grind it enough, you grind away all their resistances and they're like, okay, I'll give you, you know.
Well, and the timing too. Like, that's the other thing I've kind of learned. It's like the same message might work like 4 months from now, but not work right now. It's just about the timing in their life or kind of what's happening there. And that's been a really valuable lesson too, because I'm kind of like, I don't want to pester you with unnecessary stuff. But the truth is that I have to keep reminding you about the value at different points in time, and everybody's kind of swirling around, and you never know when the message is going to hit. So yeah, that is an important thing to know.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I stay so interested in rhetoric and persuasion as a general area, because I see the ways that the changes it makes in people's lives when they do it really, really well. Like, as you've gotten better and better and better at selling your product, and your product has gotten more and more and more focused, like you said, that now allows you to go anywhere, you know, in the world and set up and make a living. And that's all because, you know, you've been through all that. You've gotten better and better at that persuasion process around that very particular niche. And it's changed your life. I mean, that's a pretty cool outcome.
That is a cool outcome. I never thought of it that way. Thank you. I like it.
Yeah. I always want to, that's why, you know,
it's
when
funny,
you,
I don't, it, like, I don't come at it from a rhetoric perspective in any way, shape, or form. I don't really think about it that way. I think what I say in public forums and in my email is important. And I think that converts or not. Like, I'm aware of that. And I do place a high value on writing. That is important, but I don't come at it from that viewpoint. So to hear it framed that way is really interesting.
Yeah. I, you know, this weird background that I've got, which is all about, you know, highly constructed messaging to get you what you want. You know, if you can come at it with as much sophistication as possible, then you're more likely to win something. And you've gotten to sophistication over time through grind and effort, you know, trial and error. I mean,
there's people on my list. My people are on my list for years before they buy from me. Mm-hmm. And it started back in 2008 when I was doing public speaking, and people have been on my list since then, you know, just one-on-one interaction, and they got on my list and they're still on it. And then one day they're like, yeah, I finally, you know, I remember you from back in here, and then they buy. It's just crazy. And so it really does come down to the core element is what, you know, good marketing is building trust. And I think I'm conscious to never really violate that. And I mean, even to a detriment, like I'm very, very protective of the communication I put out there. I want it to be valuable. I always want it to be valuable. And I just trust that that will pay off over time.
Well, and I think that, you know, that's why people like real experts. I talked to a friend of mine last night who lives in Macau, China. And he is a professor who was teaching at Ohio University and through circumstances ended up moving over to China. And he's now taught there for 20 years in this place, Macau, which nobody's ever heard of. But I listened to him for an hour tell me all the history and intricacy and the culture of Macau. And it's fascinating. You know, he's probably one of the world's experts now on Macau, China. Okay. And it's so worth listening to because he has such a depth of expertise with it. And he's, you know, he's published 5 books on the place. He's published 30 articles. But when you have somebody that has that depth of expertise and they have a passion about it and they go and find all the interesting, you know, sub roots and all these different things about it, then it's always fun to listen to. And I think people react to that over time.
Yeah. Well, to your point, it's back to the emotion of it, right? That's a big connector of it, right? So he's got that for his niche, which is now this region of China. And I have the emotion of my affection for Evernote and GTD comes through in my teachings as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you have that, and that's when I see a lot of people trying to pivot away from employee status and over into self-employed status and figure out about something about themselves that they can sell online that people would buy. And, you know, the questions of like, is my expertise special enough? You know, is it deep enough? Is it needed in the world? You know, because so many people are trying to put expertise out there. I remember in stand-up going and listening to, you know, 17-year-olds talking about their horrible breakups or 18-year-olds on stage. It's like, yeah, let's hear about the depth of your experience in your relationships.
Well, you know, it's funny though that you say this because I remember I had kind of an aha moment early, like probably now 5 years ago about this online when I was pivoting into courses versus consulting. I went to Bali for a month and worked from there. Okay. Cause I could, and I'm like, I'm going to go create my course curriculum in Bali. Why not? Right. Okay. So yeah, I did.
Sure.
So I met an interesting group of people all doing the same thing. I was in a kind of a co-working community there, and there's this, and I ran across this guy and he had an online course and he taught how to master the handstand. And he's a yogi and he's like super buff, but he goes into handstand technique. And I'm like, if you can make a living teaching people online how to master a handstand, I can teach people Evernote and like all of this thing. It's like there's something, you know, that you can make a living doing online. And what it did is it fueled all these speaking engagements for him at yoga conferences. And he's suddenly getting paid to travel and attend these things that he loves to do because he's got this $59 course on how to master the handstand. It was like a moment where I'm like, okay, I'm on the right path. And yeah. So the alignment, I mean, it's age old advice, follow your heart and do what you love and the money's going to follow. Right. And that's it, in essence, what you're hinting at here.
In a way, but it's also follow your heart, but have, you know, a depth of expertise about what your heart follows. Like that guy, I'm sure knew a lot about handstands.
He did. He was an expert. But I thought, okay, if you could have an 8-part series on how to master a handstand, there's something to this model.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, human beings love to learn from experts. It doesn't matter what it is. Like I could care less about Macau, China, but now I'm kind of interested. Yeah. You know, like I'll just give you one of the hooks, like really good experts. They don't just learn, you know, everything generically. They start to pull out the most useful things and the most interesting things.
Yeah.
And Macau was a Portuguese colony. And when it went into China 450 years ago, there's basically no laws. Chinese laws don't apply there and Portuguese laws don't apply there, which means that you could get away with almost anything in Macau. And it became sort of like Morocco in Casablanca. You know, this neutral land. And so it became the gambling, the Las Vegas center of China. 1.3 billion people go through Macau because it's legal to gamble there. which brought all these gangsters in. And then the gold trade wasn't regulated there. So it brought all this sort of black market gold, you know, stuff and pirating. And all of a sudden it's this massively interesting place that's 9 miles wide, you know? And so I learned all that, you know, an hour talking to him, and now it's sparked my interest in it. And I won't follow up on it because I don't really care about Macau. But like Ian Fleming based Goldfinger on Macau. So when you have that kind of depth of expertise that follows your weird passion, when those two things come together, yeah, you get a lot of interest from other human beings.
Well, I think it's also hinting at something that I'm kind of seeing in my business, because obviously I have, my products are self-paced for the most part, but what I'm seeing is people want access to the expert. Okay. They want access to me. And so like the next phase of my business is developing premium offerings that give them that. Right. Because regardless of, like, I could teach the exact same thing that they'll buy in the self-paced, but charge 10 times more for it because I'm going to walk them through it. Right. And so really I'm looking at taking, doing kind of cohort-based online training, and offering that so that people can have what they want, which is access to the expert. They want access. They want to interact with me. They know what I offer. They know what I know. And they want the accountability and the ability to ask that question specific to their situation. So, and they'll pay for it. So I think that's the next trend in terms of what's happening.
Yeah. I've always loved this. Like a lot of the people that I'm interviewing on the podcast are professors, and I've interviewed a few old professors of mine that I had when I was getting my PhD, 35 years ago, because I loved their courses, because there was such depth and texture to their courses. And it's bothered me talking to them for an hour on the podcast, because I'm like, nobody has ever recorded you, and you've taught hundreds of hours of great education, and it's just going to die with you.
Yeah. You know? It's what I totally, like, I see this so clearly, and I don't understand why everybody else doesn't see it, but it's like, it's worked in the university model for years. We need to now take that into an online setting. And of course it's going to work. Of course it's going to work. And by the way, the professors could be making a ton of money doing it too.
Yeah. No, there's always been this thing, like this splintering of education, where you can learn rhetoric, for example, in 50 different states and then all around the world, but 50 different states. And that's probably 300, 400, 500, you know, universities and colleges at least. And it's taught by all these different people, but it's all the same material, but you learn it from the smartest person on presidential rhetoric in all of history versus, you know, somebody at your, you know, college that kind of has to teach this class, even though it's not their interest.
Right.
It's just a sea change of difference in your experience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, and the online world really opens up opportunities to challenge that and have excellence in education accessible to people all over the globe.
Yeah. And I'm like, you talked about earlier with your beef with one of the tag guys, you know, it'd be fun to watch you talk to him in a split screen like this, where you guys go back and forth about tags versus notebooks. And I'm sure, like, you know, the showdown tag versus notebooks, people would watch it like a, you know, it's like battle bots or something for Evernote nerds.
Yeah. I actually did pitch him on doing a blog post or something along those lines. So his interests really kind of changed, but I see the merit in that argument for sure. I need to find the right guy to do that with.
Yeah. And it's super fun for me, like coming from entertainment as well. Like, you know, I always do rhetoric, but I also go back to my entertainment background, my Hollywood background. When you start adding those elements and even things like this, like Zoom calls, yeah. So where you can actually do conflict between two people who have very strong viewpoints, then it's a new experience. You're still getting information, but you're also getting entertainment because it's two people going at each other. And if they both have, you know, good, you know, energy and emotion about it, it'd be super fun to watch. And you could both have dogs, or one of you could have a dog and a cat, and there you go.
There you go. Oh, there. That's conflict right there.
Yeah. So, well, this is cool. Thanks. I really appreciate you hanging out for a while. Like I said, anytime someone has a specific expertise, there's always cool stuff to talk to them about as they're trying to get it into the world. So,
well, it's always fun to chat with you. And I love your perspective on kind of what I'm doing, like giving me some ideas too. So new lenses.
Awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. And I will circle back around and we'll check in on the Evernote evolution of, you know, you being the premium offer to people. I think that's that'll be fun. It's more fun than just selling a course and then going around marketing the course all the time, right? Actually talk.
I love to teach, so it's going to be like that's appealing to me. You know, I'm going to get to walk people through and really like be connected to their experience as well as truly help them and do kind of what I'd love to do in a more dynamic environment. So yeah, should be good. I'll be cool. Professor Stacy, right?
Yeah, there you go. Well, pitch your stuff to people a little bit, where they can find you, where they can buy your course, what your courses are.
Everything's centralized on my website, which is harmanenterprises.com, harmanenterprises.com. All my social links are there, and there's a shop tab. You can see my latest offer. Sign up for free Evernote training as well, right on the homepage. So hope to see you.
And dog collars. Can you buy dog collars there?
Pink not dog yet. Collars? No. But, you know, she's looking pretty stylish, don't you think?
Ever collars. Like it has all your Evernote stuff in a chip right there that she carries around.
See, now you're coming up with some stuff.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's the comedy part of it all. Well, cool. Thanks again. I appreciate it. Hey, everybody. This is Rhetoric Warriors Podcast with Stacy Harmon. Get out there, learn some rhetoric. Go to Rhetoric Warriors. Take a course from me. And we'll see you again next time. Bye. What's Cochise? No.
Cosette.
I like Cochise better. It's going to have to be. You have to get it to Les Mis over into some kind of other thing I know. Cool. Thanks, Stacy.
Thank you.